We're holding on static bays, Ahmed bays, 11 lines from the bottom, the fourth line of the wide lines. And we learned yesterday about, we were still talking about Tchiyas HaMeisim, and so we mentioned the dead that Yechezkel revived, the famous valley of the dry bones and all of that. And the Gemara had asked why we don't bring a proof from there. According to Rashi, the question was the Gemara had said that the Tzaddikim event are never, that who are revived by Tchiyas HaMeisim will never die again. And the question is, don't we see that they did after the Tchiyas HaMeisim of Yechezkel? And the answer would be that there are opinions that it was only a moshul. And then the other possibility, Maharsha said, the question was, Bechlal, why can't we bring a proof from there of the reality of Tchiyas HaMeisim? And again, the answer would be because according to some opinions, it was only a moshul. But the last thing we mentioned, then the Gemara went through a couple of different opinions about who these Meisim were and what happened to them. One opinion was, we said that they were handsome Jewish young men whom Nebuchadnezzar had killed in the Valley of Dura. So now, and we said that, was the same valley. So now the Gemara is going to mention something else that happened in the same valley of Dura. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, B'shosh Hippel Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha as Hanani Mishael V'Azayah L'Kivshan Eish. The same time when Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha threw Hanani Mishael V'Azayah into the fiery furnace, so you have the story in Sefer Daniel where Nebuchadnezzar had set up this gigantic statue and ordered that everybody should bow to it, and everybody did, and all the representatives of the various nations bowed to it, except Hanani Mishael V'Azayah, who at that point they were working in the king's, they were working in the king's government. Back in Perek Aleph of Daniel, they, along with Daniel, had been taken from Eretz Yisrael to the palace and trained to be advisors and whatnot to the king. So they're representing the Jewish people. They refused to bow, so Nebuchadnezzar throws them into a furnace, and B'derech Nes they get saved from it. So now, at the same time, when he threw Hanani Mishael V'Azayah into the fiery furnace, Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yechezkel, Leich v'hachya meisim b'bikas dura. At the same time, Hashem told Yechezkel to go revive the bones in the Valley of Dura. And the Valley of Dura is, in fact, where he set up the statue as well. So these two things are in close proximity to one another. We find, by the way, I mean, Yechezkel did live at that time. This story with the statue was shortly after the Churban. It was a couple of years after the Churban. Yechezkel started saying Nevuah a few years before the Churban, before Churban Bayis Rishon, and he was still active at this time. In fact, there's a Medrash where when Hanani Mishael V'Azayah were wondering what to do, here Nebuchadnezzar has given out this order, everybody has to bow to his statue. What should we do about it? The Medrash says that they went to consult with Yechezkel to find out what they should do. Later on in the Perek, actually, the Gemara mentions something about the Pasuk mentions Ziknei Yisrael coming to Ziknei Yehuda coming to Yechezkel for a consultation, and a Medrash says that that was Hanani Mishael V'Azayah. So yeah. By the way, Tosfos mentions in a couple of places here the Gemara is going to be going through over here, and it sounds like the way the Gemara is going to be saying it was real Avodah Zarah, and therefore that they didn't bow to it is real Mesiras Nefesh to not worship Avodah Zarah, which is a very, very great thing. With that said, there are a few places in Shas where Tosfos points out it may not have been Avodah Zarah in the first place. It may have been only a statue, basically a statue in honor of the king, and technically they would have been allowed to bow to it, but they were machmer on themselves not to. The Gemara mentions in some places that if Nebuchadnezzar had threatened to torture them rather than kill them, they might have given in and bowed to it. So Tosfos points out, if it was Avodah Zarah, if it was actual Avodah Zarah, it's inconceivable that they would have done that. But if you say that it was only a statue in front of the king, in honor of the king, then maybe then maybe they would have gone ahead and done that since it wasn't truly Avodah Zarah anyway. Okay. Anyway, so yeah. Continues the Gemara. When Yechezkel revived those bones, those bones came and struck that Rasha Nebuchadnezzar in his face. Agos HaGrah, by the way, adds the words over here besides the Oisei Rasha, Shochet Tamyo, who deserves to have his bones ground up. Like here you have, and Yechezkel had revived the bones, and then before they were revived, they came and struck Nebuchadnezzar in the face. An interesting explanation I once saw is that we just said we just said before in the Gemara that these were people that Nebuchadnezzar had killed not long before that. So now he had taken some of those bones and used them to make cups and drinking utensils for himself. So now those bones that had been fashioned into those kalim for him and now are about to be rejoined with the bones that with the bodies that they came from and revived, they slapped him in the face even as he's trying to drink from them, and then they went off to be rejoined with their fellow bones. Omar, so he says, Mativ and Shalelu, what's going on over here? Why are these bones hitting me in the face? Omruloi, people told him, Chavrei and Shalelu, the colleague of these three tzaddikim, Yechezkel, who's a colleague, is a tzaddik, like Hanani Mishael Azariah, Mechaya Mason, Mabikas Dura, is right now reviving the dead in the Valley of Dura. Posach va'omar. So then Nebuchadnezzar was very impressed. He starts with a praise of Hashem. Also he kimor Rav Ravin, as the Pasuk describes, Nebuchadnezzar said after all of these events, he says that after all of these events, he says a praise to Hashem. Asohi kimor Rav Ravin. Hashem's wonder is how great they are. V'simhoihi and the amazing things he does. Kimos sakifin, how powerful they are. Malchusei malchus olam. His kingship is an eternal kingship. V'sholtonim dor v'dor, and his dominion is over every generation. So he's like lyrically praising Hashem for what he just experienced, that he saw the nest that happened, Hanani Mishael v'Azariah, and in addition also this nest that the dead were revived and that they even hit him in the face first. So v'goymer, he continues on, and so the Gemara says Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, but Rabbi Yitzchak says Yutzak Zohav Reseach Vaseich Piv Shal Oisei Rasha. Gold, molten gold, ought to be poured into the mouth of that Rasha. Meaning, we're talking about Nebuchadnezzar, the Rasha. So we mean, in other words, he deserves to really, really, it should be hot lead, like earlier in the Masechta, where a person who's executed by Sreifa gets hot lead poured down their throat, in deference to the fact Nebuchadnezzar is a king. So instead, we speak of molten gold. But in other words, Rabbi Yitzchak is saying a strong criticism of how could it's a chutzpah of Nebuchadnezzar to be doing that. If a malach had not come at that point and slapped him in the face to prevent him from stopping to prevent him from saying anything further, he would have put in the shade. He would have outshined all of the praises of Hashem that David HaMelech said in Sefer Tehillim. This is a very lyrical pasuk that he's praising Hashem and recognizing Hashem's greatness. So Rashi says, if he had continued to say such praises, Rashi says, Hashem might have been more inclined to be interested in them more than the praises of David. So therefore, at that point, the Malach slapped him in the face to prevent him from saying anything further. Now, what does that mean? A Rasha like him, Hashem is going to prefer his praises to David HaMelech just because they sound like nicer poetry or whatever? So first of all, Maharsha explains over here the details of what Nebuchadnezzar is saying, that he's talking about the various aspects of Hashem's greatness and how it's from generation to generation, and therefore it would have been a very nice praise. But still, you have the question still, why would Hashem have preferred that? So Ben Yehoyada and a couple of other Mefarshim explain, we don't actually mean that Hashem would have preferred them. What we mean is that people would have thought that the people would make the mistake of thinking these are greater than David HaMelech's praises. So therefore, Hashem stopped him so he doesn't go any further and in people's eyes outshine David's praises. I once saw a vort on it also that David HaMelech composed all of Sefer Tehillim, and sometimes there were some parts of it that he was in tremendous pain and tremendous trouble and sorrow when he composed them. We have a number of the captions for a number of the kapitlach, Bevorchem Ipnei Avshalom Bnoi and Bevorchem Ipnei Shol Bama'ora and different other things like that, where he was in desperate straits and he's calling out to Hashem and singing to him. So the vort is the Malach comes and slaps Nebuchadnezzar as if to say, listen, David composed kapitlach to Hashem and then praises to Hashem, even when he's suffering and being slapped metaphorically in the face. Let's see if you're capable of that also. And he didn't, which shows that he's nowhere near the caliber of David.
Hasidus, they explain it like in Yisro, from the lowest of the
from the
low.
Lowest comes the highest. That's true also, right? But still, Nebuchadnezzar, being a Rosha, doesn't deserve to have that kind of thing. Later in the Perek, in fact, the Gemara points out, here you have various famous Rishoyim in Jewish history who ended up having Jewish descendants. Haman ended up having Jewish descendants, it says later in the Perek. Sisera, Nero, a few other examples, yeah. So here the Gemara says later on that the Hashem had a thought of having Nebuchadnezzar the same thing, and it turned out that no, there's no good in him at all to even have such a thing. So therefore, by the same token over here, there's not enough good in him to be able to praise Hashem in this way. Okay. The Gemara continues. Tanarabanan, shisha nisim nasu ba'isayoyim. Six nisim happen on that day, besides for the fact that Hanani, Mishael, v'Azaria were saved from the fire, which it says openly in the Pasuk. The Gemara wants us to know that six other nisim, which are not explicitly said in the Pasuk, happen on that day. Well, one of them is Yechezkel reviving the bones, which it does say in the Pasuk, but not there in Daniel. It says in Sefer Yechezkel. We wouldn't realize that it was the same time if we weren't told. The Elohein, and they are as follows. The Maharal, by the way, points out symbolically, he says the same earlier in the Masechta when it talked about with Pinchas and Zimri and Cosby, where six Nisim happened to him. And the Maharal points out that six is a very appropriate number when it comes to Nisim, in the sense that they come from the name of Hashem, from the Vav of Hashem's name, Hamshacha, bringing down all the course into our world through an open nest, and therefore it's very appropriate that there should be six of them. Anyway, the Elohein and they are as follows. Sof HaKivshan, the furnace floated up to the surface of the ground. Now, the furnace was that they were thrown into was more like a kiln that usually they would use to melt to make limestone or whatever. Usually, such a thing would be dug into a hole in the ground. Here, so now the point was though that you have first of all the psukim describe how the fire in it was so intense that it burned several of the goyim nearby. So that wouldn't happen if it wasn't level with the ground. So therefore, that had to happen. And second of all, in order that everybody should see the nest, then also it had to happen that it would float to the surface so that way everybody can see them in there and see how they're saved. So that's the first one. The second one, the Nifratz HaKivshan, the furnace was broken open. Some of the walls fell down because even if it's above ground, it's still going to be surrounded by its walls. So therefore, the walls of it had to fall down, at least partially, in order that everybody should see them walking around in the fire over there and still safe. The Humak Sudai. The third thing is that the Sudai was Humak. Now, there's a lot of explanations. It actually brings three explanations, what that means. The first girsa Rashi says is the word is not sudoi with a dalet, but suroi with a resh. Suroi with a resh would mean his gaiva, and humak would mean that it melted away. So it would mean that Nebuchadnezzar's greatness, his gaiva, was humbled on that day, with being slapped in the face and so forth, as we're saying. The second explanation is that it is sudoi with a dalet, and it would mean meloshin yisoidoi, its foundation. The foundation of the bottom, the floor of the furnace, was melted away and lowered down further into the ground. So in other words, here the furnace as a whole was made to rise to the surface so that everybody could see. But meanwhile, the underground foundation of it dissolved away because of the fire. Rashi brings that from his Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov ben Yochur. Then he brings from another one of his Rebbeim that Vehumak Sidoi with a Yud. And Sidoi would mean it's plaster. You have plaster or mortar or whatever lining the walls of the furnace, and that melted away because of the heat. In which case, you have to ask, Ben Yehoyada asks, isn't that a fairly natural thing with an intense fire like that? And he says the vort is that. Here, the fire was very intense on the outside, and therefore it burned the goyim, as it's going to go on to say. But inside, it was comfortable for Hanani, Mishael, v'Azaria. If you're saying that inside the heat was so intense that it melted away the lime that was lining the inside of it, and that same inside Hanani, Mishael, v'Azaria walking around safely, that's a tremendous ness. That highlights the greatness of the ness. Anyway, the Nepach Tselem HaPonav, the next thing that happened was the statue overturned, it fell down on its face. The Medrash, by the way, mentions elsewhere that the statue actually it was made it had it was much taller than it was wide, so it wasn't naturally stable anyway. Nebuchadnezzar had to make a huge base for it with all the gold and silver that he had captured from Yerushalayim, that he had plundered from Yerushalayim. But here now a wind came all of a sudden and knocked it over on its face. After Hanani, Mishael, v'Azaria refused to bow to it, and they were thrown into the fire. The Nisrafu Alba Malchus, four kingdoms or four groups of goyim, four nations and their people were burnt by the fire. The Hechi Chezkel Samesim, Bikas Dura, and Yechezkel at the same time, like we said before, revived the dead in the Valley of Dura. So the Gemara points out v'cholu Gemara. Now, most of these things we don't know. There's nothing in the Pasuk that indicates that these things happen. We learn the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim that this is how it was. The Abramalchius Krub, but the fact that four nations were destroyed at that point, that we can derive from a pasuk. Dichtiv, because originally the pasuk describes when Nebuchadnezzar first set up the statue and ordered everybody to come to bow to it. So it says, Nebuchadnezzar Malcha Shlach, he sent messengers, Lemichnash, to gather, La'achashdarpanaya, the Achashdarpanim, which we know from Megillas Esther, like the satraps, the noblemen, or whatever, Signayo Fachavas. And all the rulers of all the nations. So the Gemara here, now Mefoshim on the Pasuk, understand, Reb Sadia going on the Pasuk brings that he brings these are various levels of ministers. Achashdarpanaya would be the ones who are second in command of the kingdom, like they're the governors of the provinces. Signaya would mean the generals. Pachavosa are the governors of individual areas, etc. And he goes through and explains how each one of them refers to a different level of government. The Eben Ezra on that pasuk says a couple of them I can tell you, but the rest of them I can't really understand. The Gemara over here is assuming that these are actually names of nations. So it means, in other words, they're kings and they're important people. So it mentions seven of them. Uchtiv. Then the pasuk says Isai Guvin Yehudoi, and then people come to Nebuchadnezzar to slander Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, and tell them that they're not bowing. There are these Jewish men, and then Nebuchadnezzar orders them thrown into the fire. Uchtiv. And afterwards it says Omiskanshin Achashtapanaya, Signaya Ufachavosa, V'Hadovrei Malka. And then it says that the three of the groups from before, the Achashtapanim, the Sgonim, and the Pachvois are gathering, V'Hadovrei Malka, and the king's advisors, Chozayin the and they see these men that they're safe inside the fire. So it mentions only three of the groups where before it mentioned seven. Therefore, we can derive from the Pesukim what happened to the other four. They got burnt by the fire. The Pesuk actually says that when the soldiers grabbed Hanani, Mishael, Azariah and arrested them and then threw them into the fire, a tongue of fire came out. The fire was so intense that burnt the men who were holding on to them. So here the Gemara is understanding that it also burnt these four nations as well. So now the Gemara is going to go in. Let's talk more about what happened at this time with Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. Toni Dveira, Belezim, and Yaakov. Afilu b'shasa sakona. Even when a person is in danger, lo yishana odem asatzim in an arbonus shaloy. A person should not change his normal way of acting in a distinguished way. Hiu Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. As we're going to show, we're wearing important clothing. They were ministers to the king, after all. So they were wearing their robes of office, and they still were wearing them at this time when they're being thrown into the fire. Shenemar, they die in at that time, Guvraya Ilich, these men, Kfisu, were tied up with Sabrelehon, wearing their Sabrelehon, which is like a cloak, Pachehon, in their pants, the Chabaloshon, and their turbans. So we see that they didn't go and dress in humbler clothing or whatever. So Rashi explains that this way he shouldn't look like he's scared. Like Fakert, when he stands there in the distinguished way like they do, then his enemies are going to be more embarrassed of him. Marshall gives a different reason. If he doesn't wear this kind of clothing at a time like that, it shows like he's complaining against Hashem's justice. So like as if he's afraid and he's feeling bad over the fact that Hashem is going to cause him punishment. So instead he should accept it ba'ava, and therefore in token of that they still wore their distinguished clothing. As the pasuk continues and lists what happened to them, the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Gdolim tzaddikim yosim malachi asharis. Tzaddikim are greater even than the malachi asharis. Because the pasuk says, Onev Omar, Nebuchadnezzar speaks up and he says, he asks his men, didn't we throw three people into the furnace? Yes, your majesty. Onev Omar, he speaks up and answers and says, Ho anochozi guvrin arba'ah, but I see four men, shnayin, untied, because here before they've been bound in chains, because so their chains and whatever melted away from the heat, but they themselves are fine. Machlechin, mahalchin begon nura, they're walking within the fire. Vachavola, and there's no injury to them. And the appearance of the fourth one, Dome the Bara Lekin, resembles a Malach. So we see now that this Malach Gavriel had been sent to save them. The Gemara tells us in Psachim. So he's being called the fourth, as in other words, he's mentioned only after them, and he's walking behind them. So that shows that they're greater than he is. By the way, Medrash mentions elsewhere, how does Nebuchadnezzar know what a malach looks like to be able to say? Because later on, the Gemara is going to tell us in a couple of blocks that Nebuchadnezzar was one of the only survivors of Sancheiriv's army from 100 years earlier. At that time, a malach had come and destroyed the army. So Nebuchadnezzar got a good look at a malach then, so now he knows what a malach looks like. There is, by the way, also a Medrash that says that when Nebuchadnezzar says, Bara the kin, a son of Hashem. Well, he means Malach, but still, he got another slap on the face for that. Don't call him Bara the kin. Hashem has no sons. Hashem doesn't have children like that, like the way the Goyim believe. Anyway, so the Gemara continues. When Hanani Mishol Vazaya got safely out of the furnace, all the nations of the world came and were hitting the enemies of the Jewish people, which is a euphemism for the Jewish people themselves, on the face. They said to them, Yesh lachem alekakazeh, you have such a great Hashem, you have such a great God who saved your people from the fire. How you talking that the rest of you did bow to the statue? And the point is, Hanani Mishael Vazari didn't, but there were other Jews in government service at that time who did bow to it. In fact, the Gemara in Megillah tells us that was one of the contributing factors later on when Haman made his Gzera. One of the contributing factors was that they had bowed down to the statue. Again, even if we say it wasn't fully Avodah Zarah, it was still a Chilul Hashem. So now everybody after the fact is coming and saying, how could you bow to it in the first place? Didn't you realize how you should have realized to begin with how great your God is? Miyad poschu v'omru, right away, these Jews who were insulted like that by the Goyim, they started by saying, the posik in Daniel, l'cho Hashem atzdoka, v'lonu boshes aponim kayyem azeh. Yours, Hashem, is the righteousness, and ours is the humiliation of our faces on this day, kayyem azeh, meaning this particular day when the Goyim confronted us and said, how could we have done such a thing? So Kayyem Azeh, in other words, that the on this day when they came out of the Kibshon Eish. The Gemara continues, Omer Rav Shmuel ben Nachmeni, Omer Rav Yonasan, my dichtiv, Posek in Shir HaShirim says, Omarti El of the summer, I had said that I will go up, I will ascend or climb up on the palm tree, Oichazab Sansinov, I will hold on to Sansinov, to the clusters of dates that are there. So this is the Shir HaShirim is a dialogue between Hashem and the Jewish people. So Amarti Ela B'Samer Elu Yisrael. I thought I would rise up and I would be exalted through the palm tree refers to the Jewish people. In a few places in Shas, the Gemara explains that the Jewish people are compared to a palm tree. Rashi brings over here, any other tree, you cut it open, you'll find growth rings inside it. So like the tree, you'll find growth rings. The tree every year grows a new ring as it grows larger and larger. So like it's not like one monolithic unit, but a palm tree, you cut it open, you don't find that. The inside of it is one undifferentiated mass. You have it, it looks the same every place inside the core of it. So therefore a palm tree serves as a symbol of the Jewish people who have only lev echad, one undivided heart, one undivided attention towards Hashem. So a palm tree is a symbol of the Jewish people. So Hashem said, Amarti Ela B'Samer Elu Yisrael, I thought that I would be exalted through the entire Jewish people, that there's going to be many tzaddikim among the Jewish people. I would have grabbed a hold of the clusters of dates on them, representing that there would be many groups of tzaddikim. But now, like now in the end, there was only one cluster of Hanani Mishael Vazalia where they stood firm, strong, and tall like a palm tree and didn't bow to the statue, and everybody else did. So, in other words, Hashem is saying, kind of, I'm disappointed that more Jews didn't rise to the challenge. And the Gemara continues with another drasha in a similar vein. Omer Rav Yechanan,
it's sort of a stira, because before we said that in reality it was only a picture. It wasn't it was a form of him. It wasn't really the real form of Avodah Zarah. But for three tzaddikim,
even Tosfos agrees that even Tosfos would have to agree based on this Gemara that it was, if nothing else, a Chilul Hashem. So yes, if Nebuchadnezzar had threatened to torture them, they would have given in, Chilul Hashem or not. But here, like this, where it was, so to speak, only to be thrown into a fire and they would die quickly on the face of it, then where the Gemara is saying over here that the Eibishter expected that more people would stand up and withstand that Nisoyan. In fact, by the way, the Gemara is going to ask soon, what about Daniel? He was also in the king's service, and we don't find him in this story, so we'll talk about soon. The Gemara is going to explain, but in other words, of the Jews who were in the king's service, who were there and then vowed, we're saying that the Eibishter expected better of more of them. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, and my dichtiv, Pasuk says in Zechariah, Zechariah was a Navi around this time. We find him at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, so this is a few decades after this. Maybe he was alive at this time, maybe not, I don't know. But anyway, the Pasuk says, Ra'isi HaLaila, the Navi says, I saw the night, V'hine ish roichav al sus adam, and behold, there was a man riding on a red horse, V'hu oimid bein ha'hadasim, asher b'metzula v'gomer, and he was standing among the hadasim that are in the swamp. And then the pasuk goes on to mention other colors of horses that were with him as well. So, what's going on over here? My ra'isi halayla, what's this expression, I saw the night, means bikish, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lapachas kol ha'olam kolo l'layla. Hashem was thinking of turning the entire world into night to destroy the entire world for the fact that the people are bowing to the statue, and that even the Jews are not withstanding it until he saw what Hanani, Mishael, Azariah are doing. So this is, in other words, later on, Zechariah is explaining in a nevuah what was going on at that time. V'hine ish roichev, and when the pasuk continues, behold, there was a man riding, an ish al HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the man over here refers to Hashem, Shenema, Hashem ish mochama, Hashem shmoy, Hashem is the master of war, Hashem is his name, so we see that the word ish is used of Hashem. Al sus adam, when it says he was riding on a red horse, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu lapachas ha'olam kol ha'adam, Hashem was thinking to turn the entire world into blood, meaning, in other words, again, to destroy the whole world. We see that Hashem, Marsha points out, we see that Hashem fought against the Mitzriim, and Hashem used his attribute of Gvura for that. So here he was thinking that nobody's standing up to it. So what do I need a world for if nobody's gonna stand up to Nebuchadnezzar and his schemes? There is, by the way, an interesting idea. Some of the Mephoshim say part of what Nebuchadnezzar had in mind with the statue, especially according to the opinion, it wasn't Avodah Zarah. In the previous chapter of Daniel, you have the story over there where Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. Well, he sees a gigantic statue. The head of it is made out of gold, the chest of it out of silver, the arms out of copper, and so forth. And then a stone comes and hits it and knocks the whole thing down. And Daniel explains to him that the statue represents the four Malchias, four empires that are going to rule over the Jewish people until Mashiach comes. You, Nebuchadnezzar, and your Babylonian empire are the head made out of gold. The Persian empire is compared to the silver. Alexander the Great's empire and its aftermath is the copper, etc. And then he says eventually the stone representing Mashiach and the Jewish people is going to knock all that over, and Hashem's kingship is going to be reestablished openly in the world. So now Nebuchadnezzar thinks to make a statue of all gold representing, again, his nation of Babel, and have everybody bow to it. Thereby, everybody will acknowledge, therefore, that Nebuchadnezzar's kingship deserves to last forever. So now Hashem is saying, if everybody's going to do that, and even the Jews are doing that, so it means they've lost their belief in Mashiach, Racham Al-Litzlan, what do I need a world for? So now, this is Zechariah is telling us how there was a threat of darkness and of blood. But then the Pasuk says, then the Gemara continues, Kivin Shenistakol B'Chanani Mishael V'Azariah. But then Hashem looked at Hanani Mishael V'Azariah, who stood firm and they did not bow to it. Oh, well, then that shows there's still a core among the Jewish people who are faithful to Hashem. So Niskar Adaita, Hashem, so to speak, calmed down. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, V'Hu Oimid Bein Hadassim Asher B'Metzula. The Pasuk continues that he was standing among the Hadassim in the valley, in the depths. The Hadassim refers to the Tzaddikim. Shenema Vayhi Oimen as Hadassah, as we find that Esther's real name was Hadassah. And the Gemara mentions in Megillah that one reason she's called Hadassah is because she was a Tzaddikus. Vein Metzula El Bavel, and the word Metzula, the depths or the swamp, refers to Bavel. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Ha'oimel Atzula Choravi. Hashem says through the Navi to the swamp, meaning Bavel, dry up. V'nari sayich oivish, and I'll dry up your rivers. Bavel was a low-lying, swampy area full of rivers and canals. So Hashem is saying metaphorically that your power is going to be overthrown and you're going to be defeated by your enemies. But we see that Bavel is called Sula, the swamp. So in the same way over here. So in other words, again. So now the pasuk continues with the other colors of horses that were following Hashem. Miyad. So right away, Meleim Hashem Roiges, the horses representing Hashem's anger that were red, Nasim Srukim, they instead became Srukim, which means Rashi says other colors, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden says means like a pale shade of red. So instead of an intense red like before, now they're like a pinkish color, representing the calming down of Hashem's anger. And then the pasuk continues. Adumim, Nasu Levonim, the red ones became completely white. Because the pasuk mentions over there, after it mentions the red horse that Hashem, so to speak, is riding on, after it mentions that after him were horses of other colors, red, Srukim, and white. So the Gemara is explaining, in other words, that what happened was, as a result of Hanani Mishal Vazalia's heroism, therefore the red and the anger of Hashem transformed into Srukim, into colorful, and they were pale red, and then into white, into complete chesed. Omra Papa Shmamino, you can see from this, by the way, that we see that a red horse is being used negatively and a white horse positively. If a person sees a white horse in a dream, he should realize it's a good simon. It shows that Hashem is going to extend chesed to him. Okay. That I want to add that now, after this story, we never find Hanani Mishal Vazalia mentioned Psukim again. So for Rabbanan Lahecha Ozul or Ozlu, these Rabbanan, Hanani Mishal Vazalia, where did they go in the aftermath of all of this? What happened to them? So the Gemara brings several opinions. Omer Rav ba'ayin hora mesu. Rav says they passed away as a result of an ayin hora. Everybody was looking at them and everybody was staring at them over that they got saved from the fire, and therefore that caused them to suffer from the effects of an ayin hora. Rav, by the way, elsewhere in Shas mentions that an ayin hora is extremely dangerous. So Rav says, I checked out of every 100 people, 99 of them passed away because of ayin hora. So we see how powerful it is that even it was able, even despite the fact that Hashem saved them with open nisim, nevertheless, an ayin hora has a power over them. Or Shmuel Amar Beroik Tovu. Shmuel says they drowned in saliva. What does that mean? Rashi explains. We said before that the Goyim were insulting and humiliating the Jews. How could you have worshipped? How could you have bowed down to the statue instead of standing firm, like Hanani Mishal Vazalia did? So now they were not only slapping the Jews, they were spitting at them as well. And the Hanani Mishal Vazalia drowned in all of that spit. Now, how could that be? Is that enough saliva to literally drown in it? So the Yad Ramah explains it means, it doesn't mean literally they drowned in spit. It means metaphorically they died of the embarrassment of it, that they to realize that because of them, now the whole Jewish people have been disgraced and embarrassed by the Goyim. That was too much for them, says Shmuel. And the Maharal also explains, in other words, that basically they're a kapara for the generation at this point. They themselves were heroic and they didn't bow down to the statue, but they weren't moicha and others who did. So in a certain sense, they share in the embarrassment to the rest of the Jewish people, and therefore they were taken away at this point as a kapara for the humiliation that the Jewish people suffered at that time.
Moicha because they were throwing themselves into
it. No, but before it happened, they have time before it happens. They know it's going to happen. The Medrash even mentions they had time to consult with Yechezkel, like I mentioned before. So why didn't they tell, the Maharal seems to be saying then that why didn't they go and tell other Jews, you shouldn't be doing that. So that's the second opinion. Rabbi Yechanan, Omar Rabbi Yechanan says nothing of the above. They didn't actually die. Olula Eretz Yisrael, they went up to Eretz Yisrael, and Nosum Noshim, they got married, very little bonum bonus, and they had children.
Oh, they weren't married before.
They weren't married before. When they were first taken to the palace, they were young boys. And the point would be, Maharsha explains at this point, they don't want to work for Nebuchadnezzar anymore. So therefore, so now, of course, Nebuchadnezzar still rules over Eretz Yisrael. It's not like you can't summon them back from there. But in other words, they said, we want to retire from day-to-day government service in Babel. And we want to retire from your service and live a normal life.
We met a Malach and we were up a level.
Yeah, pretty much. So the Gemara says, Ketanoi. This is actually like Macholikas Tanoim on this point. Rabbi Eliezer Omer ba'ayin hora mesu. Rabbi Eliezer says like Rab that they passed away as a result of an ayin hora. Rabbi Yeshua Omer b'roik tovu. Rabbi Yeshua says they drowned in the saliva, as we just said, according to like Shmuel. V'cham emim olu la'aretz Yisrael. They went up to Eretz Yisrael. V'nosu noshim. They got married. Very little bonim and bonus, and they had children. Shenemar, and we know that, say the Chachamim, that they later on went to Eretz Yisrael because later on you have a nevuah also in Sefer Zechariah to Yeshua Kohen Gadol. We read it as the Haftorah for the first Shabbos of Hanukkah. and also for Parashas Ba'aloscha, Shema no Yeshua Kohen Gadol, you Yeshua the Kohen Gadol, he was the first Kohen Gadol in the second Beis Hamikdash. Listen, Ata Vireecha Yoshim Vanacha, you and your colleagues who are sitting in front of you, Ki Anshe Mofes Hema, they are men of Mofes, of Nisim. So Evahen Anoshim, Shanaselahem Mofes. What people from that period do we find that a nest, that an open nest happened to them? Heavy Emes, Hanani Mishal Vazalia. So therefore, so the Novi is addressing the Malach is addressing them, and then the Novi Zechariah is seeing this happen and records it, that he's speaking to Yeshua and to his colleagues Hanani Mishal Vazalia. So therefore, the Chum say, you see that they survived this story by many decades. Okay. The Gemara says, Daniel, what are Lahecha Azal? Where did Daniel go at this point? We don't find him in this whole story of Hanani Mishal Vazari. We find him very active before and after that, but he obviously didn't bow to the statue either. Where was he at the time? So Omar Rav, so again, there's a three-way opinion what happened. Omar Rav, Lemichra Nara Rabba B'Tveria. He was sent to dig. To dig a great river, a great canal in the city of Tveria. Rashi says another explanation, another girsa is not Tveria, but Betura in a mountain. Now the Gemara is going to point out soon, actually, that everybody who was involved over here, Hashem and Daniel and Mahavdol Nebuchadnezzar, all had good reasons for Daniel not being there during this whole episode. So now, according to Rav, he had been sent on a mission by Nebuchadnezzar at that time to go dig this canal. Shmuel says he had been sent to bring grass seeds for food for the animals. Rashi just says Hochi Havakim Lahu, each of these Chachamim had the Kabbalah from their Rebbeim, that was what Daniel had been sent at that time. I mean, you'd have to wonder. I mean, Daniel, a great minister, is being sent on such an unimportant mission. The Maharal actually talks about, he says symbolically, the idea is, the first opinion says, which everybody agrees, that he was sent on some kind of service of the king. But what would you consider service? What would you consider avoida? Rav is holding that to mean actual physical labor, therefore, as in digging a canal like that. Shmuel says it's enough that he was going to provide a food supply, so therefore that a food supply even for the animals, that can also be considered avodas amelach. In other words, the point is, as the Gemara is going to say soon, Nebuchadnezzar had a reason to have Daniel out of town at the time. He didn't want that he should be there during this whole thing. So therefore, any excuse will do to send him out of town, and the Chum are disagreeing what that excuse was. Rabbi Yechanan says that he sent him to bring pigs from Alexandria in Egypt. Alexandria, the actual city of Alexandria, hadn't been founded yet, but it means, in other words, that area of Egypt. In other words, there were very high quality pigs grown over there, and Nebuchadnezzar wanted a lineage of those, wanted a bloodline of those established in Babel, so he sent Daniel to bring some. And the idea would be that eventually he, Nebuchadnezzar himself, could eat from it. Nebuchadnezzar being a goy, no problem with him eating that, so Daniel could bring him that. So the Gemara says, Eini, is that so, about on Rabbi Yochanan particularly, how would he be able to bring them for out of Egypt anyway? And Vartanya, or Vartanan really, it's a Mishnah in Bechoros, Todas HaRoifer Omer, Todas the doctor said. Now the Gemara, the Mishnah is discussing the question over there whether if an animal has its womb removed surgically or otherwise missing, is it Trefa? So the Chachamim were thinking that yes, the womb is a vital organ. But Todas HaRoifet points out to them, Ein part of a Chazira Yotzim Alexandria Shemitzrayim, not a single female cow or female pig goes out of Alexandria in Egypt, Shein Choschena Eim Shala, where they don't remove its womb before they export it, Bishvor Shalei Teled, so it doesn't give birth, because they don't. These are very high quality animals. The Egyptians didn't want that such animals of that quality should be exported to other countries. So that being the case, how is Daniel supposed to get these animals out of there? So the answer is Zutri Aisi Beloy Datayu. He took small ones and they didn't realize. He was able to hide small ones, and they didn't realize. They thought he's just taking them for food purposes, and they didn't realize that he's actually taking them to establish a bloodline of them in Babel. So therefore, he was able to sneak them out. Beni Oyada brings up the point. I mean, at this point, Nebuchadnezzar ruled over Mitzrayim as well. So what, Daniel can't come openly and take them? And he says, because basically the point was not so much to smuggle, again, the point was not so much to smuggle out these particular animals, but rather people shouldn't realize that Daniel has been sent on a mission by Nebuchadnezzar, and they shouldn't put two and two together and realize why he wasn't there at the time of this thing and with the statue. So therefore, Daniel had to do his mission undercover. and therefore he couldn't openly present himself as an agent of Nebuchadnezzar, and therefore you'd have to sneak him out. Okay. Now, so what was so the Gemara says, Tanan Rabban, Shlosha Hoyu Ba'isa Eitza. There were three who were involved in that idea that Daniel shouldn't be present at the time of the story with the statue, that instead he should be sent out of town. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar. Hashem wanted that, Daniel wanted that, and Lahavdil Nebuchadnezzar wanted that. Each for their own reasons. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Amar Nezel Daniel Mahalcha. Hashem says that Daniel should be out of town at the time. D'lo lemru b'schuse isnatzel. You don't want, people shouldn't think that Chanai Mishra Bazari themselves are not such great tzaddikim. They're friends of Daniel, so they were saved in his schus.
So
it was known that everybody knew that they were friends, but Daniel is certainly not going to bow to the statue.
Daniel was known to be a tzaddik those days.
Yeah, all of them were known to be tzaddikim, but nevertheless, people would have thought that Chanai Mishra Bazari are like second level tzaddikim. Daniel is the primary one. We find, for example, in Perek Aleph of Daniel, when they're being served food from the royal kitchen, shefer food, it's first Daniel who comes up with the idea, we can't do this, we have to find a way to get kosher food instead, and then he tells Hanani Mishael Vazalia, and they back him up in it, and they all get special food. But we see that Daniel was kind of the ringleader, so he also, you would have thought that he's the greater tzaddik, and the rest of them are lesser ones. So this way, everybody should realize that it's just in their own schus. Daniel, I'm a ezel mahacha. Daniel figured, I need to get out of here. So there shouldn't be fulfilled in me the pasuk. The idols, the statues of their gods should be burnt in fire. Now, what happened was in the previous perek in Daniel, you have again the whole story with Nebuchadnezzar's dream with the giant statue and all of that. After now Nebuchadnezzar in the psukim over there had forgotten even the dream. So unlike, for example, Parai and the Saramashkim and the Saroifim, whatever, who remembered their dream and they just didn't know what it meant. He or Nebuchadnezzar didn't even remember what the dream itself was, and he's threatening his advisors that they're going to be executed if they don't tell him, and they're telling him it's impossible, no human being can do it. And then Daniel comes and tells him the actual dream and the interpretation. So Nebuchadnezzar is so overawed by him that the pasuk says he starts starts bowing down to Daniel and offering korbanos to him, like he wants to make him into a living god. So now Daniel thinks to himself, you know what, if I've just been worshipped as a god, then I better get out of here, otherwise, like a getchke is supposed to do, I need to be burnt. And in fact, a medrash actually says that if Daniel had been there, he would have been burnt. Because the fact that he even allowed Nebuchadnezzar to even start doing that before he protested, then it's held against him on his level as a tzaddik. So therefore, so Daniel figured he has good reason to stay away from there. Meanwhile, Nebuchadnezzar also figured that Daniel should get out of here for the same reason. People shouldn't say, look at that, he burnt his own god in the fire. Here, people just knew that he had bowed down to Daniel and offered him korbanos and everything, and now he's going to be throwing him in the fire for not bowing to a statue, so people are going to think less of Nebuchadnezzar for it. So for all of them, for all of those reasons, Daniel was out of town, and what exactly it was, then you have the three-way machlokes. So the Gemara says that. The Gemara says, "When I the Sigidle, how do we know that Nebuchadnezzar bowed to Nebuchadnezzar? Dichtiv, because you have in the Pesukim after we interpreted the dream. Beidayin at that time, Malka Nebuchadnezzar nefalam anpoi. King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face in front of Daniel. Ul Daniel Sigid v'Gemara, and he bowed to Daniel." And he even was going to bring him, he was even going to bring him korbanos. So we see that, so he didn't actually bring him korbanos. The Metzudas David there explains that Daniel told him, no, I don't need your korbanos. But still, the very fact that he bowed to him as a deity already, so that made him, to a certain extent, he had been treated as a getchka, and therefore Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar both figured it's better that he's not there. Okay. Now, so besides for Hanani, Mishael, Vazalia, we have another story of people who were thrown into a fiery furnace by Nebuchadnezzar. So now let's talk about this story, which ties in with the story of Hanani, Mishael, Vazalia as well. The Pesuk says, the Navi Yirmiyah says, Yirmiyah was also active at this time. He was active in the years before the Churban and immediately after it. So now the Pesuk says, he says, Koyama Hashem Tzvokas Elokei Yisrael, so says Hashem, El Achav ben Koloya ve'el Tzidkiyah ben Maaseya, regarding these two people, Achav ben Koloya and Tzidkiyah ben Maaseya. Achav and Tzidkiyah are both the names of kings as well, by the way, but these are not kings, these are false Nevi'im. who happen to bear the same names. Hanibim lachem b'shmi lashoker v'goymer. They're giving nevuah falsely in my name. So Hashem says that Hashem says through Yirmiyah that they're going to be given over to Nebuchadnezzar and he's going to kill them. Uchtiv, and the pasuk continues. V'lukach mehem klala l'chol golus Yehuda asher b'Bavel lemer. They will be used as an example of a klala for all Jews who live in Bavel, saying people will say when they want one person wants to curse another. Yisimcha Hashem, Kitzikyohu Echov, may Hashem make you like Tzidkiyahu and like Echov, Ashikolam Melech Bavel Ba'esh, that the king of Bavel burnt them in fire. So in other words, their punishment, their public punishment, is going to serve as an object lesson to everybody. What they did wrong, the Gemara is going to explain soon. But let's focus on that word Ashikolam. Asher Sofram Lainem, it doesn't say that he burnt them. Ella Asher Kolam, it says Kolam, which is also a Lashon of burning, but it's an unusual Lashon. Amr Rab Yechen, Meshum Rab Shimon Yechoy, Melamed Shasoin Kekloyus. It means that he made them like toasted grain. They were burnt from the outside. So what does that mean? Marsha says, in other words, like this, we have earlier in the Masechta, when we talk about a person who's Chayiv Sreifa, where hot lead is poured down his throat. Here instead, Nebuchadnezzar had them burnt at the stake, or burnt in a furnace or whatever, so they were burnt from the outside. At a different point, Ben Yehoyada says that's just it. If he had thrown them into a fiery furnace, then they would be completely burnt up. Nobody would even recognize the bodies afterwards. So instead, he Davka had them punished in a way where afterwards the bodies are burnt and they're dead, but they're still recognizable, and that would be all the greater humiliation for them. So that therefore uses the word kolam rather than surfam, which would suggest that he burnt them to ashes.
How did you just take them out earlier?
And so yeah, it would take them out as soon as they're dead. Yeah. So what happened? So the pasuk goes on to say, Yirmiyah goes on to describe what they did wrong. Yana sha'osu nevola b'Yisrael, because they did a disgusting thing among the Jewish people. Vayinafus nesheira ehem, and they committed adultery with other people's wives. So what happened? My ovud, what was their scam? So they went to Nebuchadnezzar's daughter, each one by himself. Achav comes to her and tells her that Hashem says that you should submit to, you should have relations with my friend Tzidkiyah. And Tzidkiyah comes to her later on and tells her, I have a nevuah from Hashem that you should have relations with Achav. So they have the scam going on where each one is saying that Hashem said that you should have relations with the other one. And by the way, the Medrash says this wasn't their first time they did this. They tried this with other women as well, and then there were some women who bought into it. So now they figured they're going to try their luck with the princess.
These were
Yidden. These were Jews, but yeah, they had the scam going over here. By the way, it's not you have in later Jewish history as well. The Noda Yehuda has a tshuva on a subject where there was this Yid comes to town and pretends to be this great tzaddik and this great Baal Yisurim and everything, and a couple has him stay in their house. Anyway, because he wooms his way into their confidence. Eventually, one day he tells the woman of the house, "I'm actually Eliyahu Hanavi in disguise, and if you have relations with me, our child will be Mashiach." So she, being a simple woman, bought into it. She had relations with him. Then the guy skipped town, and she realized she'd been scammed. And the question is brought to the Noda Yehuda: is it considered that she was Mizana Birotzin, in which case she's also to her husband, or is it considered Oinus? So yeah, so people. Shabtai Tzvi used to do this kind of thing as well. He claimed that he claimed he's going to bring the Geula through doing Averus. Yeah, so this kind of scam has a long pedigree. Yeah. Anyway, so she went and told her father what these guys had said. Omala, he said, yeah. Omala, he says to her, I don't know. This doesn't smell right. Elakeim shall elu sonya zimahu. The Jewish God hates immorality. He knows a little bit about Yiddishkeit. Yeah. So he also legaboch. If they come back to you, shadrina legaboy, send them to me and I'll deal with them. Ki also legabe. So ki also legaboch. So sure enough, when they came back to her, she sent them to her father that he should talk to them. So he says to them, "Man omalachoin, who told you such a thing?" Omru, they said, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem told us." He says, "Well, Hanani Mishal Vazari Shultinu, I asked my Jewish advisors, Hanani Mishal Vazariya, the Omru Li Osir, and they told me such a thing as Osir." Omru Li, so they try to bluff their way through it. I'm in Nevi'im Kamasayu. Fine, we're Nevi'im just like them. Lididhulai, Omalahu, Lididan, Omalon. Hashem never told them such a thing he told us. Here, we learned in the previous Perek that there's the Navi WhatsApp group, so to speak, and every Navi knows what every other one has said, but obviously they counted on that Nebuchadnezzar is not going to know such a thing. Omalahu, so he says, I don't know that. I buy this, I want to test you. The same way I tested Hanani Mishal Vazalia, I threw them into a furnace and they came out of it unscathed. The same way, if you're real Nevi'im of their caliber, then I want to do the same thing to you. Uh-oh, now they realize they're in trouble. Omrule, so they use an excuse. Inun Tlosahavu, there were three of them. We're only two. Two people don't have the same degree of schus as three. So therefore, yeah, we might not survive, but that might not be because we're not tzaddikim like them. It's just because there's not as many of us. Goes to Bach points out at this point, Nebuchadnezzar should tell them, you know what, later on in the story you have, he says, but Avraham Avinu was one person and he got out of the fire safely. At this point, he could have said this to them as well, but instead he doesn't do that. So Omalahu fine, he says, Bachru l'choin mandabu isabadai. Fine, choose a third person to go with you. Omru, so they thought to themselves, Yeshua Kohen Gadol. So Omru, Yeshua Kohen Gadol. They said, Yeshua the Kohen Gadol. He wasn't the Kohen Gadol yet. This is before the second Beis Hamikdash was built. He was the first Kohen Gadol, the second Beis Hamikdash, but he was already known to be a tzaddik. He was a son of the last Kohen Gadol, the first Beis Hamikdash, and they figured he's a tzaddik. Savri, they figured, Leisi Yeshua de Nafesh Schosei, Yeshua who has great schosim, he's a tzaddik. Magna Alon, his schosim will protect us. Asiyuhu, so they lowered him. Shadinhu, and they threw them all into the furnace. Inhu iklu, they were burnt, which is why we said before, I should call him Melech Bavel Ba'esh. Yeshua Kohen Gadol ichruchi mani. Yeshua Kohen Gadol's clothes were singed. Shenema, as you find later on in the Nevuah of Zechariah that we quoted a pasuk from before, Vayar'enias Yeshua HaKohen HaGadol, the Malach showed me Yeshua the Kohen Gadol oimed lifnei Malach Hashem, standing in front of the Malach of Hashem, v'goymer, uchtiv, and then the pasuk mentions that the Satan is there trying to accuse him, uchtiv, and the next pasuk continues, Vayomer Hashem al Satan, Yigar Hashem b'chol, v'goymer, Hashem says to the Satan, Hashem will rebuke you, Satan, what are you doing, trying to stir up and trying to be makatrig on Yeshua, and the pasuk says, Haloiza the pasuk says, isn't he like a brand, like a burning thing that was pulled out of the fire? So we see that he had been in the fire and had been saved from it. And in fact, the pasuk afterwards goes on to say that he was wearing dirty clothing, and then Zechariah asks on his behalf, the Malach, and then later on Zechariah asks on his behalf that it should be replaced with clean clothing representing that Hashem has forgiven his averus. So we see that this was all as a result of this. By the way, the sichas, early sichas, where the Rebbe talks about this idea of ud mutzel ma'esh, all of us in the period after the Holocaust are in ud mutzel ma'esh, and therefore the Eibishter says to the Satan, don't you dare start up with the Yidden. Nobody should ever be makatrig on Jews again after all of that, like the pasuk is saying over here, yeah. Anyway, so Omalei, so Nebuchadnezzar says to Yeshua, Yadayna tzaddikat, I understand you were tzaddik, that's obviously why you were saved from the fire, Ela my time Ahanya Bachpurta, Nura, why did the fire have some effect on you that burnt your clothing? Chanani Mishal Vazalia lo Yahanya Bahuklau, is Chanani Mishal Vazalia got out completely unscathed. The pasuk even mentions about Chanani Mishal Vazalia, there wasn't even a smell of fire on them. So how come by you weren't? So Yeshua says, Inu tlosa avu v'anochad. They were three, yes. I'm one, unless schus. Omalei, so Nebuchadnezzar, is being a smart guy, says, Avraham yochid hava. But Avraham was one person, and he was also not harmed by the fire at all. And Yeshua says, Hosam lehavu reshoim ba'day. The difference is there were no reshoim with him there. V'lo isihiv reshus alanura. So the fire wasn't given permission in the first place to harm him at all. Hocha havu reshoim ba'adi. Here there were two reshoim together with me. V'isihiv reshus alanura. So the fire had been given permission by Hashem to destroy, so therefore I got affected by it also. It's like the expression people say, if you have in a fire two sticks of dry wood and one of moist wood, then the dry ones are going to kindle the wet one a little bit, and they're not going to cause it to be completely burnt, but they're going to cause it to catch on fire a little bit. So the same way the fire that burnt them had a certain effect on Yeshua as well. But the Gemara says, my time at Iyanesh, why indeed was he punished? Meaning, Rashi says this that he said to Nebuchadnezzar was really just an excuse. Hashem is obviously able to save him without touching him at all and burn them. So it's really an excuse. So what's the real reason? Marsha says that's not the Gemara's question. The Gemara's question is, why was Yeshua made to have to undergo this experience in the first place of having to be thrown into the fire and saved B'derech Nes? And the reason is, I'm going to show you Bonav Noisin Noshim Shein and Agunas the Kohana, because his sons were marrying women who are not suitable for the Kohana, and he didn't protest against them.
Wow.
Shenema, as the Pasuk says, V'Yoshua ha'yolavush begodim tzoyim. The Pasuk says in Zechariah's Nebuah that Yeshua was wearing dirty clothing. Since when would Yeshua, the Kohen Gadol, be wearing dirty clothing? So from here we see that his sons were marrying women that are not appropriate for the Kohuna. And remember, that can mean, it can mean, for example, Giyotis. They can be Jewish women, but nevertheless, they're still Kohenim, have no business marrying them. And he didn't protest against them. And therefore, in token of that, in the Nevuah, he's wearing dirty clothing until the Malach asks on his behalf to take off that, meaning, in other words, that Hashem should show openly that he's moichel them. Because, in fact, later on, you have when Ezra dealt with the whole matter of intermarriages and everything, so then he got everybody to separate from their wives. And in fact, the Pesukim in Ezra mention, they don't explicitly mention, so it actually mentions, Mibnei Yeshua ben Yitzadok ve'achav, from the sons of Yeshua ben Yitzadok and his brothers. And it mentions four people over there who had married Goyish women, maybe actual Goytis, maybe they'd converted them, but even so, a Kohen's not allowed to marry them. And Ezra got them to separate from them. So therefore, in token of that, this Nevuah is at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash at that time. So therefore, the Malach says to Hashem, please show openly that you've forgiven Yeshua completely and that he can wear clean clothing.
Yeshua's children,
and Pasuk mentions four of them, four children, the four people from that family who divorced their Goyish wives. Yeah. Okay.
Strange thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's where the Sitracha jumps in.
Yep, exactly. Okay. So now we're going on to a new topic. Now we're going to talk about other tzaddikim. Later on, the Gemara is going to tie this in with Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. We're going to talk about tzaddikim who descended from Rus. So we know, of course, David HaMelech and the whole dynasty of Malchus Beis David descends from her, but we're going to talk about other tzaddikim as well. Omer Abtanchum, Dorosh Bakapora B'Tzipori. Bakapora gave the following drosha in the city of Tzipori. My dichtiv, you have in the story of Rus. So she spent the night in the granary over there and tells Boaz, you have to marry me. And he tells her, I have to take care of the situation tomorrow morning. And then the Pasuk says that he gave her six barley. So six, the Gemara is going to explain what that means. So, and then she comes back home to Naomi and she says, Shesha sa'ur ma'ilam nosan li. But he gave me these six barley. Now, what does that mean? My sheish ha-sa'odim. What does that mean? Six barley. Ilema sheish sa'odim mamash. Does it mean literally six grains of barley? V'chidaukesh ha-boyaz litin matona sheish sa'odim. Is Boaz a very generous person? He's not going to give only six barley grains. It actually has a gusa, sheish shibolim, six stalks of grain. But still, that's not very much. The halacha is, in fact, when you're giving a poor person food, you give him at least a half a calf of barley, which is a lot more than six stalks. Oh. So why only six stalks?
Earlier in the story, he gave much more.
Yeah, exactly. Ela sheish se'in, does it mean six sa'? V'chidauka shal isha little sheish se'in. How would a woman carry six sa'? It's too heavy. A sa' would be around 20 pounds. So you're talking like well over 100 pounds. Now, why doesn't the Gemara assume that it was some kind of other measurement in between? So Rashi points out, in a granary, you usually don't have smaller measuring containers. You don't usually have kav or lug measuring containers in a granary, because you usually measure grain wholesale by the saw. So therefore, so it's one or the other. Ela remez romazla. So it means he actually gave her six barley grains or stalks, but he was doing that as a remez. He didn't only give her that. He gave her food for the trip and to take to Naomi as well. But in addition, he gave her this as a remez. Shasidin shisha bonim lotzis mimena shemis borchen b'sheish sheish brachas. Six tzaddikim are going to descend from her, each of whom is going to be blessed with six brachas. So therefore, in token of that, he gave her six grains of barley. The barley represents the barley representing tzaddikim. So a Gemara in Cholin mentions that when a person sees Sa'urim in a dream, it represents that Sar Avinoisa, that his Averis have been gone away and have been forgiven. So therefore, barley represents the Tzaddikim. The Margolius Hayam brings it over here. And then Maral gives an explanation. Again, we talked about before about Nisim and the letter Vav. He says, besides, the letter Vav is a straight line, so it shows a person of true emes. So therefore, and it's also like a pillar that supports there. And so therefore, it's an appropriate metaphor for a tzaddik. And therefore, six tzaddikim, each of whom has six qualities. The Elohein and the six tzaddikim are David, Umashiach, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Vazariah. And the Gemara is going to show how each one of them has six qualities. David, Dichtiv, where do we see David has six special qualities? Dichtiv, so you have in the Psukim, in Melachim, Shol is feeling depressed after the Melucha, well, after he was told by Shmuel the Melucha is being taken away from him. So now, he needs a musician to help cheer him up and bring back the spirit of Hashem to him. Vayan echad man orim vayomer. One of the young men spoke up and said, "Hine roisi bein liyishai beis halachmi. I've seen a son of Yishai from Beis Lechem. Yedea nagen. He knows how to play music, the Gibur Chayil, and he's a mighty, powerful person, the Ishmael Chama, and a man of war, the Unuvoin Dover, he's able to understand things, the Ishtoyar, and a man of good appearance, the Hashem Imoy, and Hashem is with him, the Goymer actually, Agoy Sagura, takes out, because that's actually the end of the Pasim. So therefore, so you see six qualities that he's praising David for. However, the Omer of Yehuda Amarab, call a Pasik Azeh, like Omer Doyeg Ela B'Lashon Hara. This man who spoke up is Doyeg. Later on in the Masechta, it says that Doyeg lived to be only 33 years old, so relatively speaking, he's young. He's certainly younger than all of us who are sitting over here. And he was saying this out of he wanted to arouse Shaul's jealousy against David. So let's explain what each of these things mean. Now, the what's bothering the Gemara is, if it's just that he's being brought as a musician, it's not important that he's strong and knows how to fight and so forth. So therefore, the Gemara is understanding that these are qualities of the ideal Talmud Chacham. Because the point is, he's not just going to be stamp playing music, he's going to be trying to bring Ruach HaKodesh back to Shoal, and therefore he has to have these qualities. So, Yedea Nagin means Yedea Lishol. He knows how to ask good questions in Halacha. That can be called Nagin, as in the way that we know when we ask a question, we do it with a Nigun. So therefore, that's Yedea Nagin. Gibber, when it says he's mighty, Yedea Lahoshiv. He knows how to answer properly. Ish Milchama, when it says a man of war, means on top of that, Sheyedea Lisa V'litin B'mocham Tashol Torah, he knows how to give and take in the war of Torah. So not just he can give you an answer, but he can go and show all of the logical, all the logic behind it and be able to argue and then defend his point. Ish Toyar, when it says a man of appearance, means Shemara Ponim B'Halacha, he's able to show a face in Halacha, he's able to show the reasoning behind what he's saying. It's not just I say it, and that's how it is. He can bring a face and show what the logic behind it is. Or Nuvoin Dover, and then he's able to understand, means Shemavin Dover, Mitech Dover, he's able to derive one thing from another in Torah. This is in parenthesis because it's really supposed to be the other way around, and the Pasuk it has Nuvoin Dover before Ish Toyar. So those are five things so far. Vashem imoy means shalocha kamoise b'chol makim. He has this schus that is that the halocha is always like him in every area of Torah, whether dine mominus, whether dine isur v'heter, etc. And this is a special quality that he has siyata d'shmaya to be able to arrive at the correct conclusion. So we see that he had these six qualities. Now, the Gemara says, B'chulu, as Doyeg is saying each one of these things, Omalahu, Shaul says, okay, Yehonasan b'ni kamoyu. You know what? I'm not so jealous of him. My son Yehonasan has the same qualities as well. Kiven to Omalev Hashem Imay, but when Doyeg gets to the sixth one, that Hashem is with him, Milsa de Bidide Nami Lehavabe, not only Yehonasan didn't have this quality, but even Shaul himself didn't have it, as the Gemara explains in a second. Cholosh Daite, therefore, now Shaul started feeling bad, the Ikanya Be, and that started the process of him becoming jealous of David. So Doyeg's Lashon Hara had an effect. This is, by the way, an example of the concept in Halacha that you don't say a person's praises too much in front of people who don't like him because it's going to excite their jealousy and their hatred of him. Here we have an example where Doyeg was doing just that. Where do we see that Shaul didn't have this quality? By Shaul, it says, in every direction he would go, Yarshia. Now, the simple meaning of Yarshia means that he would make his enemies terrified. The word Rosha, by the way, doesn't always mean a Rosha as in a wicked person. It can, but it can also mean like a person who trembles and is fearful. So wherever he would go and fight against his enemies, he would make them trembling and fearful of him. But here the Gemara is also understanding Maloshin Yarshia, in a sense, Maloshin Rosha, that in other words, he wouldn't come up with the correct conclusion in Halacha. On the other hand, over David, by David, it says wherever he turned, he would be successful. which means that the halacha is like him. Now, there's actually no such pasuk of v'chol asher yifnei yatzliach, but the Gemara is paraphrasing a pasuk by he David l'chol drachav maskil v'Hashem imo. David was successful in all his ways, and Hashem is with him. So we see all his ways, including in discussions of Torah. So he had this special siyata d'shmaya to arrive at the correct halacha, and Shaul didn't, and therefore he was jealous of him. So the Gemara says, "Menolam d'doyeg haba." How do we know that the speaker in the first place was doyeg? Because k'sivah chavayan echad mana orim. Because the pasuk says, one of the young men spoke up, and we're meant to understand echad. If it just meant a boy, then it would say vayan nar. It means miyuchad shemin orim, the unique one among Shaul's young men. Ochtivasim v'shom ish me'avdo Shaul b'yom ahu netzo lifnei Hashem. Elsewhere, the pasuk says later on in the story of David, it says that there in Noiv, when David came there and asked for food and so forth, there was a man from Shaul's servants b'yom ahu on that day netzo lifnei Hashem. Withheld in front of Hashem, meaning he had come to the Mishkan in Noiv in order to be alone and meditate and learn Torah and connect with Hashem. His name is Doeg Adomi, Abir HaRoyim Asher L'Shol, the mighty one of the shepherds of Shol, meaning that he was the head of the Beis Din. So we see the Miyuchad Shabana Orim, therefore is Doeg. Which, by the way, there you have. He was being bespoiled, or he's being alone in the Mishkan over there to be alone with Hashem. And there, though, he sees what happens with David, and he uses that as a basis for Lashon Hara against David. So here we see this is an example. The Gemara talks about later in the parak. On the outside, he made himself look like a big tzaddik, but on the inside, he was rotten. And as an example, where we see in that very time is when he went and told Lashon Hara about David. Okay. Anyway, the point is that we see that David has six qualities, and therefore that's the first of the six tzaddikim. Mashiach, where do we see Mashiach has six qualities? Dichtiv, v'nocha all of Ruach Hashem. The spirit of Hashem will rest on Mashiach. Ruach Chochma Ovina, a spirit of Chochma and Bina. Ruach Eitzo Ogvora, a spirit of advice and strength. Ruach Das, v'yiras Hashem, a strength of knowledge and fear of Hashem. So six. So it has three pairs of things. Ruach Chochma, Bina, Eitzo Ogvora, Das, v'yiras Hashem, v'goymer. Again, Agoras Agora takes out v'goymer because it's the end of the pasuk, but we see that Mashiach has six qualities. Uchtiv. Now the pasuk though also the pasuk also continues. The pasuk continues. Va'arichay biyiras Hashem. He will va'arichay with the fear of Hashem. So what does that mean? So the Gemara is understanding that's not a seventh quality. That's something else. In fact, Agoris Agra takes out the word uchtiv because it's the very next pasuk after that. The Gemara is quoting it as one long thing. Anyway, Omer Rav Alexandri, melamachet in a mitzvah for Yisurim kerichayim, means that Moshiach is loaded up with mitzvahs and with Yisurim like millstones, which are very heavy. So, vaharichoy meloshin rechayim. Rashi also takes out the word uchtiv. The Gemara is doing a separate thing over here. We said that Mashiach has six qualities. So what does it mean? V'harichay b'yiras Hashem. It means that he's going to be loaded up with the burden of mitzvahs and with the burden of yisurim on behalf of the whole Jewish people. Like this, for example, the Rambam describes that Mashiach is going to be hoig b'torah v'osik b'mitzvahs k'david aviv. He's going to be learning Torah and doing mitzvahs like of the caliber of David. So like he has a tremendous burden of mitzvahs on behalf of the whole Jewish people and yisurim as well as various psukim talk about that Mashiach suffers Yisurim on behalf of the Jewish people. So that means, in other words, that he has it. He's going to so and Marshall also explains he in a mitzvah means that he's going to have the schus with those mitzvahs. He's going to have the schus to be the goyel. And it also means just like with millstones, you grind things and then you get grain and you get flour from it and you have hanah from it. The same way, the Jewish people are going to be zeichah to geula through the effort that Mashiach puts in. So that's Va'aricha B'yiras Hashem. Rava Amar Demurach V'doyin. Rava says a different explanation. It means that he'll smell a person and be able to judge based on that what his quality, what his caliber is in Avodas Hashem. There's two different ways of punctuating the words. It can be Demurach V'doyin, where V'doyin would be Meloshin Dayan. He smells and therefore he judges. Or the other way that's punctuated is V'doyin, meaning that he'll smell and he'll be certain of what the person's caliber is. Either way, the point is he'll be able to judge using a sense of smell. There's places where it talks about the idea that a sense of smell is the most ruchniestic of a person's five senses. So it means, in other words, that he's going to have a very heightened sense, a very, very heightened, a very sharp sense of ruchni, a very sensitive sense of ruchnius. Dichtiv, as the pasuk continues, v'lo l'mara ein of yishpot. The pasuk says he wanted to judge by the sight of his eyes. V'shofat p'tzedek dalim. He'll judge the poor with righteousness. V'yichiach b'misha la'an v'yaret, and he'll tell Musar in a straight way to the humble of the earth. So in other words, we see he's not going to need his eyes or his ears to hear what's going on. He'll be able to know through smelling what the truth is. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, Bar Kuziva Molach Tartin Shininu Pauga. Bar Kuziva, Rashi interestingly identifies him as one of the kings from the family of Hurdus. In general, he's the one who in Jewish history is called Bar Kochva. He was fighting against the Romans and he ruled and was then as an independent king for 2.5 years. So Rashi mentions this interesting idea that he was actually a descendant of Hurdus. In any case, so he ruled for 2.5 years. He says to the Chachamim of his times, I'm Mashiach. And the Rambam mentions, in fact, that Rabbi Akiva, as we're going to see in the Gemara later on in the Perek, Rabbi Akiva thought that Itaka was Mashiach. He's fighting successfully against the Romans, and we know that Rambam says that one of the simanim of Mashiach is Yochum Lechomas Hashem Minatzeach. He fights the wars of Hashem against the enemies of the Jewish people, and he wins. And he was winning for those 2.5 years, so he claimed to be Mashiach. Omrulei, but the Chacham said, but Mashiach sibd Merach v'doin. By Mashiach, we see that he's able to smell and he's able to judge. Nechzi Anan imerach v'doin. Let's see whether you, Bar Kuziva, have that capability. Kivin de Chazir de le Merach v'doin. They saw that he wasn't able to do that. He didn't have that capability. Katluhu, then they killed him. Now, what does that mean? How could they kill him? So there's different explanations. One is that basically they said, if he's claiming to be Mashiach, which is also, Mashiach is also going to be a Navi, then it means he's claiming to be a false Navi. So they killed him as a false Navi. But a different explanation is it doesn't so much mean that they killed him, it means they withdrew their support from him. And now, without the support of the Chachamim, then he ended up failing and he ended up being killed by the Romans. So therefore, so we see, in other words, that this ability to be Merach V'doyin is an essential quality of Mashiach. Okay, next we have among the six tzaddikim, Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. Where do we see that they each had six qualities? Dichtiv Bahu, the pasuk says, when they were first brought to Nebuchadnezzar's palace, Nebuchadnezzar says to his minister that he's looking for boys, Asher Ein Bahem Komum, that they have no physical defects, V'toyve Mara, they're handsome of appearance, U'maskilim B'chol Chochma, they're wise in every kind of knowledge and science, V'yoyde Das, and they know knowledge, and they're able to understand knowledge, so they have chokhmah and bina and das, and that they have the strength to stand in the king's palace, as the Gemara is going to explain further on what that means. Ulalamdam sefer ulashon kastim, and they will be taught the script and the language of the kastim, and trained to be government ministers. So we see that there are six things. Ein behem kol mum, toive mara, maskilim chochavma, yoide das, mevine mada, and koyach behem. So those are six qualities. So we see, and the Gemara is explaining that all of them were descended from David. So therefore, so we see that they had, each of them had six qualities. And again, that's what's represented by Boaz giving the six barley grains or barley stalks to Ruth hundreds of years earlier. So the Gemara says, well, let's understand a couple of these things. My asha ein behem kol mum. What is this expression that they have no physical defects in them? They didn't even have scars from bloodletting. People commonly did bloodletting in those times, and you would usually have, there would be scars, there would be little scars in various places from the needle. They didn't even have that. They were in such perfect health. They never needed bloodletting, in short. What does it mean they have the strength to stand in the king's palace? They would forcibly hold themselves back from laughter, or minasicha, or from talking, of dvarim b'talim, or minashena, or from sleeping, and they would even hold themselves back when they have to go to the bathroom because of fear of the king. In other words, when they would be at an audience in front of the king, they would suppress, they would have the ability to suppress all of their natural, all of their natural bodily functions and instincts and things like that, out of respect for the king. So this is the kind of caliber of people that this is one of the things, one of the qualities that Nebuchadnezzar was looking for in people that he's going to be training his ministers to be. And Hanani and Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah all had that capability. You have the famous story hundreds of years later involving Bustanai. How much of the story is true is a whole other question. But anyway, you have the famous story where he's standing at an audience in front of the Persian king, and a mosquito comes and bites him on the forehead, and he doesn't react. And the king says, and he explains, based on this Gemara, that that's when you're standing in front of a king, you have to be completely at attention and not allow yourself to be distracted by anything else. So the story goes that when he's appointed Resh Galusa, when he's appointed the governor of the Jews in Babel, his coat of arms, his official coat of arms, had a picture of a mosquito on it in token of that story. It's a lesson for us also, you know, when we're davening, that we're standing at an audience in front of Hashem, obviously it's a lesson to also to have the same mentality as well. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow with more about Hanani Mishael Azariah and more about Mashiach Be'ez Hashem.